I'm going to introduce you, even though he needs no introduction, to Richard Packham, who's going to introduce our next speaker. And while he's here, I want to remind you that he is speaking on Sunday afternoon at another meeting, and the information and address for that are on the bulletin board out there. And I will turn the time over to Richard.
Steve Hassan is a cult counselor and mind control expert, a nationally certified counselor and licensed mental health counselor. He has developed a breakthrough approach to helping loved ones to get their loved ones out of cult mind control. Now, by asking Steve to speak to us, we are not necessarily implying that the Mormon Church is a cult. You ask any Mormon and they will tell you that the church is not a cult. They recognize that the FLDS is a cult, but not the LDS church. President Monson would not run a cult. He is a prophet of God. Other so-called prophets run cults, but not President Monson. So, we have that cleared up. Steve is a former member of the Reverend Moon cult, and his experiences there, and later professional training and experience, mean that ex-cult members and relatives of those trapped in destructive organizations often seek him out for specialized counseling and help that other mental health professionals are not necessarily able to provide. Steve has been at the forefront of cult awareness activism for over 30 years and is the author of two critically acclaimed books, Combating Cult Mind Control from 1988 and Releasing the Bonds, Empowering People to Think for Themselves, which I can tell you those books have. I know personally of people who have been brought out of the Mormon Church by people applying the techniques in those books. He's appeared on almost every major news program, including Larry King, Dateline, 60 Minutes, O'Reilly Factor, and so on, to name just a few. He's the founder of the Freedom of Mind Resource Center, which is on the internet at www.freedomofmind.com. And it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Stephen Hassan.
And thanks, Richard, so much for all your help, and Sue, and thank you for inviting me. This has been a real learning experience for me, so I thank you. How many people here have heard of the Moonies? Okay, good. Because I was telling people that I was in the Moonies. They say, "Were you in the Mormons?" I was, "No, I was in the Moonies." And they're like, "Huh?" So it's important for you to understand that I come to the whole cult mind control field as a convert or a recruitee into the Moonies when I was 19, back in 1974 when I was an upper junior at Queens College in New York. And I basically, within the space of several weeks, came to believe that Moon was the Messiah. The last days were upon us. World War III was going to happen in 1977. I dropped out of college, quit my job, donated my bank account, cut off contact with my family and friends because they were satanic, because they dared to say I was in a cult. And I became a fanatical member of the cult, and it's still not closing. Okay, I have to do the blank thing. You said it would work. Let's try it. Okay, sorry about that. Yes, that's what I want. I would like you to focus on me instead of on. And the truth is, I almost never use PowerPoint or visuals, but I thought it might be helpful, so I have it all queued up. But it's very important for you to understand that I have an intimate knowledge of what it's like to have a radical personality change, have my entire belief system changed into a black and white, us versus them, good versus evil mentality, where you're totally dependent on your authority figures to define what reality is, where you're alienated from your own thoughts and feelings, where phobias are installed in your mind, which are irrational fears, are installed in your mind that if you even think negative thoughts, terrible things will happen to you. And in the Moon cult, and I don't call him Reverend Moon because he was never ordained. He went like this, I'm a reverend. And he got a doctorate by paying off some college to get an honorary doctorate, so I don't like to call him a Dr. Moon. I call him a cult leader, a demagogue, a fanatic, a man who wants to take over the world, literally. And just to give you a visual for that, I thought I would play you 2 minutes from a BBC documentary called Emperor of the Universe. Because that's what we thought. He was the Messiah. I mean, every major leader in the spiritual world has bowed to Moon in the spirit world.
Was famous, a modern-day Messiah.
He's a great teacher. He's a great prophet and a Messiah.
We see him as the Lord of the universe, the first person coming as God's representative.
The true
Adam. Convicted felon, he controls wealth beyond imagination.
Airplane
that
company.
The heart of Moon's psyche is the drive, the need for power.
Dream technology.
He thinks he can literally buy countries.
Absolutely.
He leads a church or a cult.
He's quoted as saying this, is that we want absolute control of the mind. And to me, that means brainwashing.
He's presiding over a mass wedding
strangers.
Where he tells people who they're going to marry.
World's finest matchmaker.
They're given a kendo stick.
Manse means victory.
And the woman has to bend over and the man hits her three
identical
times as hard as he
wedding
can
dresses,
with the kendo
identical
stick.
Suits.
He crusaded against communism.
He brought down the Soviet Union personally, according to the members.
Very clear.
And it goes on and on and on. But just to give you a... And, pardon me? I don't know. It was done by the BBC. We put it on YouTube and it was taken off, and I'm not aware. It went back on? Do search for Emperor of the Universe in quotation marks. I'm in that video, I should add. But, and people say, were you married in the group? The fortunate thing was I was 19 when I was recruited, and I got out just before my 22nd birthday. And actually, they were marrying 26-year-old men and older at that time. But people, and also we're recording it, so it won't be picked up, et cetera. I want you to know that I came from a middle-class family in Queens, New York, two older sisters, a conservative Jewish upbringing. I skipped eighth grade, extra honor student. I wrote poetry and short stories. I wanted to be an English professor. I was not a joiner. I was an introvert. I had no political aspirations to take over the world. I had close family and close friends, and in the space of a few weeks, I came to have a mind control experience, what I believe is a mind control experience, and what 32 years of my experience helping thousands of people around the world out of hundreds of different groups and situations is a mind control experience. And I was essentially made into one of the highest ranking American leaders. And essentially I was promoted because I did exactly what I was told. I was like, I really believed it was God. God was speaking through Moon. He was more than a prophet. He was the Messiah. He was sinless, had a second wife, had children out of wedlock. But those are rumors. Shh. Don't think those negative thoughts. And I At one leadership meeting, Moon said to a number of us, when we take over the world, you should think what country you want to run. And I was thinking, Australia would be good. I could have my own continent. And it's funny now, but I mean, literally, Zig Heil. I mean, that was when I saw the planes being flown into the World Trade Centers, I thought I would have done that. That's how far gone I was. And people say, well, how'd you get out if you were that fanatical, if you were that high up? The truth is I fell asleep at the wheel of a van driving 80 miles an hour into the back of a tractor trailer truck, broke my leg, needed two operations. And while I was in the hospital, I had a lot of time to sleep, which I didn't have in the group. I was sleeping an average of 3 to 4 hours a night, working 7 days a week. And I missed my sister, Thea, who was the only person in my life, literally my friends, my family, who didn't attack my involvement with the Moonies. She was the only one who just said, I love you. I don't understand. I miss you. So I called her, and she said, oh, you have a nephew you haven't met. Come home. I'll take care of you. I said, if you promise not to tell the parents, and if you promise not to tell Steph, my eldest sister, I'll arrange it, because I was a leader. I could arrange things like that. And thank God she broke her promise, told my parents, and they literally did a deprogramming intervention with me. And in my case, they didn't need to kidnap me. My father arrived, took my crutches away, and put them on the other side of the room. And I had a cast from here to here. And they said, we want to talk to you about your involvement with the Unification Church. And I was a fanatic. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on my personal story, but I really want you to understand that I've been in the world. I've been in the mindset of having a radical personality change, of having all of my beliefs shifted 180 degrees from the point of being a Jew who believes in free will and who was horrified by the Holocaust to believing that, you know, I have to be a heavenly soldier for God and a slave to God, and that the Holocaust was justified because the Jews didn't accept Jesus. I mean, just to give you an example of how extreme the beliefs changed in me. And I've heard a number of ex-members saying comments like, boy, was I stupid being in the group or whatever. And I'm here to testify to and to tell you as a mental health professional that, oh, the fish want to come back. I love fish. I scuba dive. I don't know if anyone else does. Lost my train of thought. What was I saying? Anybody listening? Not stupid. I'm telling you, I've met thousands of people who've been in mind control experiences, and I would say on the average their IQ is 130 or higher. It is not an issue of intelligence. It's an issue that we're human beings. And part of what I needed to do during my intervention, I won't get into it, I described some of it in my first book, but at the point former members were telling me about Chinese communist brainwashing techniques, I was curious. It wasn't attacking Father. It wasn't attacking the divine principle, which is the doctrine. You have the Book of Mormon. We had the divine principle, black book, this thick. And in the Moon theology, the commies were Satan's army. So sure, I'd be interested in what the Chinese communists did for brainwashing. And so they started telling me about Robert J. Lifton, who was an Air Force psychiatrist who had been commissioned in the 1950s by military intelligence to go to Hong Kong and start interviewing people who had come out of Mao's thought reform programs and tell the military what the heck is brainwashing. And he wrote a book called Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism, in which he outlined 8 criteria that any environment may be judged as a brainwashing, or he preferred the term thought reform environment. And as we were going through every one of the 8 criteria, as much as I didn't want to say it verbally, I was like, we do that, we do that, we do that, we do that. And I assure you, the Mormon organization does all of them too. And I was left with an intellectual quandary of, wait a minute, Satan's army does brainwashing, God's army does brainwashing? How does this work? I mean, and God is absolute, eternal, and unchanging. That's the Mooney doctrine. And if God didn't interfere with Adam and Eve in the fall, then how come God is changing and now interfering and making people do the right thing? And by the way, the presentation by Ken on deception, brilliant. It could have been exactly about the Moonies. I have quotes called Master Speaks, the internal speeches, where Moon says, God tells lies very often. Or it's not a lie if you're doing it to help somebody. And of course, helping somebody is defined as getting them into the group. And making them give up all their money, making them marry people who are strangers, who they can't even speak the same language, having every single aspect of their life controlled. So for me, it was like beginning of the house of cards falling down. But for me, it was in the space of 5 days of attack. It was four people just telling me negative stuff, negative stuff, negative stuff, negative stuff, and me just going, no, 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 no. But I was still listening. And the bottom line is, I'm a good person. I grew up to be a good person. I'm an honest person. I'm an idealistic person. And there's no way in the world that I would have ever chosen to get involved with a group that lies and manipulates and controls people's minds and breaks up families, wants to institute a totalistic theology and enslave everyone else in the world, where the leaders live a totally luxurious life while members sleep on cold wooden floors and have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And by the fifth day, I had an epiphany, which some of the ex-members were talking about epiphanies. My epiphany was when the ex-members were reading one of Moon's speeches to congressmen and senators. And the quote was basically, there's a controversy that me, Reverend Moon, is brainwashing American youth. Is that possible? Can me, Reverend Moon, a Korean, brainwash an American? I know your answer is no. My answer is no, too. No American is so foolish, and I respect Americans very much. And I was listening, and the ex-members just read it. It was his own words. It said, what do you think, Steve? And I said, what a snake in my head. What a liar. I had heard him hundreds of times talk about how stupid Americans were, how pathetic Americans were, because the Koreans were the master race. They were the Adam country. We, Americans, were the archangel country designated to serve Adam and Eve. That's all we were good for, to help get him money. This is starting to bother me. I'm going to have to turn this off. I love fish. It's relaxing and soothing? Good. Very briefly, so there I was. I was a top leader in a multi-billion-dollar group. And by the way, I have a list of front groups of the Moonies on my website, freedomofmind.com. Last time I checked, it was 50 pages long, single-spaced. Lest you think that the Moonies are a non-entity or something, they own the Washington Times newspaper, a newspaper that's never made a penny in 25 years, and over $2 billion is estimated to have been spent. They own the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. They own the broadcast facilities that every major network uses for TV in Washington, D.C. They own a gun factory in Worcester, Massachusetts. They own the largest fish processing plant in Kodiak, Alaska. And they really do want to still take over the world, people. So for me, at the point that I had my epiphany and the cards started to fall, I felt like I had just been shoved off the top of a skyscraper and I had no idea where I was going. And I cried for 3 hours straight.
And I just said, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I believe. I'm so sorry. And what do I do? And believe me, I had been so indoctrinated, I considered the possibility that I had been brainwashed by the ex-members. So I said to myself, I'm not going to do anything public. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to take 3 months and start reading through the divine principle. I'm going to read through all the literature and all the history and find former members and find out what they know and do my homework. And part of what I was really fascinated with was, what is this brainwashing thing? And I basically called Robert Lifton's office and tracked him down. I said, I'd like to have a meeting with you. He said, why? I said, because I read Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism. He said, that old book? Because at the time it was 15 years old. I said, yeah. He said, why? And I said, because it helped me get out of a totalistic group. And I met with him and I told him about how the Moonies recruit on the street, the 3-day workshop, the 7-day workshop, the 20-day workshop, the 40-day workshop, the 120-day workshop. And he said, you know what, Steve? What you're describing is so much more sophisticated than what the Chinese communists were doing in the 50s. He said, it's like a mutant hybrid. And he said, you know what? I've only studied it secondhand by interviewing people. He said, you've lived it. It was done to you and you did it to other people. He said, you're the expert. I'm like, really? I'm not just the stupid college dropout who got conned and believed this fantasy story about the Messiah. And it began what turned out to be my life work. I didn't realize it at the time. And there's much more to my story. Jonestown and... Thank you. So what I'm hoping to do, and my sense in talking with everybody is that most of the people in this room were born into LDS. Is that true? As opposed to recruited? A few people were recruited. I know Ken said that he was recruited. And I've done therapy with people who've been born in the Moonies. I've done therapy with people born in Scientology, in the Hare Krishnas, in the Children of God, in Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints group. And many, many other groups. So I have not had an experience of counseling someone who was born into LDS, but maybe I'll have an opportunity at some point in the near future. But it's, for me, my reaction, folks, and responding to what Richard was saying before about how it's not a cult, my response is, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, has feathers like a duck, has DNA like a duck, it's a duck. And just because it's been around for a long time and has infiltrated and mainstreamed doesn't make what they're doing kosher, to use a Jewish term. And, you know, I'm like you, living in the 21st century, and I believe in human rights, fundamental human rights. Fish. I may have to turn this off. I really do think I'm going to use this PowerPoint. Let me actually go forward with this PowerPoint. The United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Read it. And I was talking with a few ex-members the other night about how what would really be smart in terms of not only dealing with the LDS group, but the Moonies, Scientology, and myriads, thousands of other cults, would be to try to create a situation in Washington where they're not just being lobbied by all these multi-million, multi-billion dollar groups, but actually have some accountability for groups that have tax exemption status. That if why are we funding groups to that lie, that defraud people? Because think about it. It's such a critical notion. People say, well, you're an adult. You chose to get into the Moonies. I said, I was lied to. I asked those, and I didn't say in my story, I had just broken up with my girlfriend. I was depressed. 3 attractive women were flirting with me. That's how I got recruited into the Moonies. I even said, are you part of some religious group? Oh, no, not at all. And within 2 weeks, I'm bowing to an altar with Moon's picture on it, reciting a pledge to follow, that Korea is my fatherland. So anyway, there's so much I want to talk about. I'm going to lay down some key ideas. And what my hope is we'll have time for questions and answers. I know a lot of you have expressed the desire for me to talk about how to help a loved one, a friend or a loved one, get out of a mind control group. But first, I thought I'd just start with, this is on my website, and I think almost everything that I'm going to show up here is on my website, freedomofmind.com. But extreme identity confusion. So a very important concept I want to convey to you is, as a mental health professional, there's this diagnostic manual of psychiatric disorders. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. It's called the DSM-4. There's a category called dissociative disorder NOS, not otherwise specified. And it's the only category that actually talks about brainwashing and cults. And I understand there's a lot of politicking going on. They may even take the word cult out and just leave the brainwashing. But essentially, what I believe mind control is it's a dissociative disorder where a person is separated from their thoughts and feelings and inner essence, their inner self. And I know it may be confusing for those of you who were born in a cult who say, but I didn't have an identity prior to getting, being involved with LDS. But my experience is that people have an authentic self. Like, children are born, they are not blank slates. I have a young boy going on 6, and he has a very distinctive personality. And I've heard several ex-members talking about, well, I was rebellious, or I didn't believe it. I went along with it, but I didn't believe it. It's the splitting of your real self to your cult identity. So it's a dual identity model. And I talk about it in my first book, which I wrote 20 years ago, Combating Cult Mind Control, as John and John cult member. You can apply it in any way, your LDS self versus your real self, the group self versus your real self. And it's a very useful and important tool in terms of conceptualizing what mind control is and also in terms of doing therapy and helping people to get out. And for me, I was lucky. I was 19 when I was recruited into the Moonies. So I could recreate what I believed and who I was before. I mean, part of my recruitment into the Moonies, they wanted me to sacrifice my Isaac. So they asked me to throw out all my poetry. So I threw out, I lost 400 poems and such, but there were still a few that my family had saved and such. But there were photographs. My friends could remind me of things we did together. And I literally, when I first came out of the Moonies, I thought I had a terrible childhood and that my father would, physically abused me. I actually literally had false beliefs about my childhood that had been installed from the group. And it's a very common pattern, by the way, in mind control groups to distort your memories and such. And my sisters were like, what are you, crazy? Dad never was violent with us. And I said, yes, he was. He slapped me in the face. And she said, yeah, once, he lost his temper, but that just wasn't the reality. So I need help. Help. The truth is I'm not used to using PowerPoint, so this is a little different. Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. So one of the big issues is you come out and you go, well, who am I? What do I believe? It's a major issue for all ex-members. And from what I've heard, all of you have been doing the typical thing that you do, which is read everything that the group produced and talk to former members and such. But what I would urge you all to do is start learning more about the psychology of influence. Start learning the broader picture of how normal, quote, normal human beings are influenced by group dynamics, by authority issues, by situational variables, and start learning about other cults. and start talking to former members who were born in other cults and listen to their tales, because it will give you a perspective, a much deeper perspective, as opposed to just reacting against what you grew up with. It'll help you step back and say, you know what? I'm not alone. I wasn't stupid. This is a worldwide epidemic. And by the way, people say, what's the largest cult, Steve? Anybody want to guess? What's the largest cult? I'm inviting the audience. Catholic Church, I heard. Huh? Islam. How about China? Isn't China the largest country on earth? I got news for you. They're reforming, but they're still a mind control cult by my criteria, which we're going to go over. So if you think about it, if you're visiting from outer space, looking at free will and choice on planet Earth, more people are still enslaved than are thinking for themselves. I mean, if you really put it in perspective, we're at a very, you know, early part of our evolution as a species. And God knows we hope that we're going to live to keep this planet together. So figuring out who you believe. And I also want to point out one other very important concept, which is the issue of modeling. Modeling is essentially taking an example of something that works and comparing it with an example of something that doesn't work so well. Or taking an example of functionality and comparing it with dysfunctionality. So for all of you who are born in a cult, you need to kind of study what is normal developmental psychology. Like if you were in a family, a quote, normal American family, what would your experiences have been like? And I've done a lot of work with former Jehovah's Witnesses, for example. And by the way, when I wrote Combating, I didn't think they were a cult either. And I got like hundreds of letters from ex-Jehovah's Witnesses who were saying, I've underlined your entire book. I couldn't put it down. How come you didn't mention the Watchtower Society? I'm like, why? Are they a cult? And they're, yeah, everything you said. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more. But basically helping them to, again, instead of just react against what they were raised up in or saying, you know what, all religions are evil, you know, all spiritual experiences is wrong, realize the big picture is influence, ethical influence versus unethical influence. The big picture is there are political cults like China. There are therapy cults. There are business cults, like multi-level marketing cults, like Amway, for example, and other multi-level market that use mind control technique, and religious cults. And that ultimately what we want to do is control our own minds, be our own selves. And for those of you who believe in God, and I'm not saying a Zeus-like anthropomorphized God, but the divine spirit, the divine being, it's very interesting. We're all different. We all have unique personalities and unique talents and abilities. And I truly believe that being true to ourselves is connecting us also to everyone else. And that ultimately what we really want to do is grow and love and serve and be connected. Not in a enslavement mode, but in a free will mode, because it feels good, because we're good people, because we realize we're on this tiny little speck, planet Earth, floating around in this immense universe amongst immense other universes, and we need each other to survive in a very fundamental way. And this kind of exclusive, I'm better than you, I know the truth and you don't, and we're going to heaven and you're going to hell stuff is very archaic. So figuring out, helping you to figure out who am I? And when people say, I haven't a clue, I say, okay, well, do you like to paint pictures, or do you like music, or do you like to do dancing, or do you... like, what do you like to do? And people say, oh, yeah, I really like to dance. So I just really feel myself when I'm dancing. Okay, so that's a part of your identity. Like, start there, you know? And create yourself the way you want to be. You know, and you don't have to just, again, react against. You can make choices and look around at healthy people and say, you know what, I like those qualities. That person has compassion. That person is kind. That person is a good critical thinker. That's another thing that I think is so vital, is that we need to be in balance. We need to have our intuitive and our imaginative and our creative side, but we need our analytic side too. It's a reality test. And you know what research is saying? We need to trust our guts. It is actually a visceral sense, especially when we're trying to figure out extremely complex things. It's like overload for our conscious mind. But our guts can tell us what to do. And in terms of people who get recruited into cults, when I ask them, when you think back to when you were first being recruited, what did you think? What was your feeling? Almost universally, people say, I thought they were nuts, or I thought they were crazy, or I thought they were stupid, I thought they were childish. And the influence overrode their internal wisdom, their internal. So I'm mentioning a little bit about identity confusion, dissociative states. That's where you get triggered. And I want to talk a little bit about triggering, because it's a concept that's essential for all of you in your recovery. Remember Pavlov and his dogs? You know, Pavlov was working on digestion. He wasn't working on conditioned responses. He just happened to notice that as he was giving the meat powder to the dogs, this bell went off, and then the dogs were salivating, not with the meat powder, but with the bell. And it's called conditioned response, stimulus response. So we have five basic senses, and we can be triggered in any of those five senses. So we could see something, it can remind us of the cult, if you will, or trigger our cult identity, or hear a song, or, you know, feel something. I haven't felt that way since. And you're back in that state of mind. And basically what I say to all my clients is, again, you have to have the locus of control in yourself to control your own mind, your own thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And you should think about how you want to react to that stimuli. Or how would a normal person react to that stimuli? And in my case, for example, the word moon. Okay? Whenever someone said, oh, look at the moon, I was back in the cult staring up at him. You know, I had this huge picture of me kneeling at his feet going, yes, Father, whatever you want, Father. Not pleasant. And I literally needed to say, how does everybody else react when they hear the word moon? Well, they see a picture of the moon, you know, the satellite that goes around the earth, you know, and I had to literally associate the word moon with the picture. And I had to take the picture of the cult leader and shrink it up and put it over to the side. And I decided to put him behind bars. And this was way before he was sent to jail. And call him Mr. Moon. And I had to choose to think of him as Mr. Moon. Otherwise, it was like I wasn't in the cult. I was never in the cult. You know, the younger me was in the cult. So that's a little bit about that. Panic and anxiety attacks. One of the number one mind control techniques that all groups use is phobia indoctrination, the inculcation of irrational fears that terrible things are going to happen to you. Really bad things are going to happen. So that in the mind of a cult member, they can't imagine leaving and being happy and fulfilled. They can only generate negative movies. They can only hear the indoctrination in their voice. Leave? That's Satan talking. That's your lower self. That's your reactive mind. You know, and there's all these buzzwords. We'll get to buzzwords later. Reactive mind is a Scientology buzzword. But so the key is intellectually being able to discern what's a real danger, which will elicit legitimate fear reaction of fight or flight, versus what is a belief that somebody has inculcated into you that in order to keep you dependent and controlled. And in my second book, Releasing the Bonds, I have a whole chapter on the most common phobias I've encountered in my work, as well as a three-step phobia intervention. And I don't have time here, but addressing the people saying, how do I help a loved one? The three-step phobia intervention is a big piece of what I recommend that people do. So teaching people how to calm themselves, teaching people how to be in their bodies, because a lot of, especially religious cults, want to alienate you from your body and try to make normal body feelings and needs, you know, evil and wrong. I can honestly report, I never masturbated once in 2.5 years, and I was 19 to 22. I mean, I do confess I had a couple of nocturnal emissions, which resulted in a fast and a 21-minute cold shower condition because evil spirits had invaded me. But part of getting over panic attacks, anxiety attacks, is understanding how the mind-body connection, and again, learning how to get to that calm, relaxed state within yourself. A lot of common depression, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, a lot of psychosomatic symptoms. People have back problems, skin problems. I'm going to just grab this. I never used the laser pointer. Ooh. Problems with decision making and dependency. A lot of people report that they don't have psychological power. I was an English major, and I was reading graduate level when I was in seventh grade. I was reading graduate level. When I got out of the Moonies, I couldn't read a page without spacing out, and I couldn't remember what words meant. That's how messed up I was. And it's also possible that the deprogramming had something to do with it. I'm not for deprogramming, kidnapping, and holding people against their will, by the way. I thought that that's important to say. Guilt and anxiety, I mentioned before, fear, panic attack, phobias, sleep disorders, nightmares, eating disorders, sexual problems. Lack of trust. People don't trust themselves. They don't trust their partners. They don't trust anybody. And so this is a fundamental problem with all ex-members that I come across. And essentially the solution is first an intellectual understanding of what is mind control, what is influence, how to ask critical questions and be a good consumer. And essentially with that body of knowledge, doing a technique, a visualization technique, where you step back to key moments in your cult life, and you say, if I knew then what I know now, how would I have wanted to act? What would I have wanted to say to that leader when he was telling me to leave my wife or to leave my family or to turn over my bank account or this or that? And you kind of revisualize and you kind of see yourself going back into your body in that younger state. And that what you're doing is you're closing the gap of that dissociative disorder, because you're going into your cult self, and in a sense you're giving a new experience. You're saying, no, I will not lie to these people. I will not, you know, turn in my loved ones. That's wrong. When Moon said, and this was one big one for me, and it took me years to learn all this stuff, to therapize myself. But one of my big guilts was I was at this leadership meeting, and Moon said, when we take power in America, we'll amend the Constitution and make it a capital offense for people to have sex with people other than those assigned to them by the church. And I was like, yes, Father. Good idea, Father. And again, as someone who is raised with an understanding of the Holocaust, as a Jew, for me to have said, yeah, let's do mass genocide, it haunted me until I could revisualize myself back in that room and see myself saying, you're like Hitler. You're crazy. You're going to kill people because they want to have sex with their wives or with someone other than some stranger that you assign them to. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Come on, everybody. Let's get away from this nutball. And by doing that, it was an incredibly releasing experience for me because I know the real me would have never said yes to that insanity. Harassment and threats, grieving loss of friends and family, big one in the people in this room. People just talk about feeling raped in the deepest core way and violated. And how do you trust anybody? And again, as a therapist, I can't take away what really happened. I can't tell people don't remember what really happened, but I can tell people some of the techniques that help people demonstrate resiliency and recover and move on with their lives. And it comes back to being in your body in the now, as opposed to replaying tapes of indoctrination sessions or horrendous emotional fights with your loved ones or traumatic events. It's about what can I do within my control right now to live the highest quality life I can live and bring love and bring acceptance and bring peace and do my best to make the world a little bit better. So let's go on. Quick thing back to Richard with this thing of we're not a cult. Well, I don't use this definition, and I don't use theological definitions of what is a cult. I talk about authoritarian, pyramid-shaped organizations, whether it's religious, political, psychotherapy, so-called educational, commercial, which practices deceptive recruitment so that people are not able to make informed decisions, that employs the use of mind control to keep people and their followers dependent and obedient to the leader and the doctrine. And I define mind control in terms of control of four overlapping components: controlling their behavior, controlling their information, controlling their thoughts, and controlling their emotions. And if you can control those four areas in context of a group identity that's dependent on external people who are their authority figures that they report to, and the hierarchy is very evident in the LDS thing, that's the recipe. That's the duck. So the term brainwashing was coined in a military context, by the way. So I tend to use the term brainwashing more with a Patty Hearst type situation where someone is kidnapped and raped and put in a closet, and she became Tanya and she joined the Symbionese Liberation Army, as compared with what I experienced, where it was much more subtle, it was much more slick, there's a much more voluntary participation and cooperation, which brings me to another key point, that mind control is a bi-directional process between the agent of influence and the target. It's not just coming top down. It's how the person is hearing it, how they're responding to it. So that the cult identity is a synthesis of who they were before, or who, you know, their inherent personality and the doctrine. So for me, I wasn't a Christian, so all of the Moody doctrine about Jesus, I just kind of ignored as in my Moody identity. Another person who was raised as a Christian would not. But essentially, we're all then controlled by this fantasy construction with these stories of how the world began and what it's all about, the ontology of reality. And we're following that fantasy, essentially. Yes, there are people who are keeping you in line and giving you more indoctrination, but that's why it's so slick and it's so insidious, is because it's inside of us when we're under mind control, we can't step out and look at it objectively and reality test. So at the beginning, mind controllers are viewed as friends or benign or as teachers, mentors, produces new identity, internalization of beliefs. I'm going to skip this because I want to do questions and answers. Very quickly, cult psychology. Doctrine is reality. It's the truth with a capital T. It's not a dogma. It's not a teaching. It's not a story. It's the truth. So whenever anybody tells you it's the truth, you know, your antennas should go beep, 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 beep. Reality is black and white, good versus evil, elitist mentality. Someone was talking about arrogance, I think, the first night in their testimonials. Absolutely. I thought I was smarter than Einstein because, you know, Einstein didn't know the divine principle. I knew Father. I was with the Messiah. I mean, and the outside world, you're all satanic. Yuck. Unless we can bring you into the truth. Group will over individual will, strict obedience, be like the leaders, happiness through good performance, manipulation through fear and guilt, emotional highs and lows, changes in time orientation because the time is near, the end of the world is coming, you better hunker down, store that food. All right. And no way out. There's no legitimate reason to ever leave a mind control relationship or cult, according to the group. Of course, stepping out and going, you know, there's any reason. If someone's a liar, how can you trust them? Someone tells you a lie, why would you want to be in a relationship with someone who's lying to you? Even once or twice. I mean, I do the three strike rule. Three lies, you're out. I don't want to have anything to do with you if I can't trust you. I'll go into other stuff. So very quickly, this is in my book, on my website. These are the Lift and Eight criteria. Milieu control, controlling the environment, controlling communication within the environment so that the environment goes inside the person. Mystical manipulation, the demand for purity. We have to be perfect. Perfect, 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 perfect. He said in 1961, this book came out, he said, creates a relationship of shame and guilt. And the bar keeps raising higher and higher because the mind controllers want to keep you like a carrot in front of a donkey. I want the carrot. Cult of confession, no privacy, no normal boundaries. Got to tell everything. Sacred science. The dogma is scientific. Trust us. We know. Loading the language. That's the buzzwords. Doctrine over person. No matter what your experience is, doctrine wins. So, and somebody was, I think it was Ken was saying something about Joseph Smith said you can have a satanic revelation or God revelation. I'll tell you, I had spiritual experiences in the Moonies, and so like one time I had done a 7-day fast on just water, and I was listening to Moon speak, and he turned into evil, radiant evil in front of me to the point where I couldn't breathe. I felt like I was suffocating. And of course, I did the dutiful thing. I reported to my superior, and they said, that's a satanic revelation. That's Satan testing you because you're getting so high up so the definition in the Moonies of any revelation that makes you believe in Moon or the divine principle and makes you work harder, this is from God. And any revelation that makes you doubt it or question it or want to leave, this is from Satan. You get it? And the dispensing of existence. Lifton said, basically, the mind controllers said, if you're with us, then you have deserved to exist. And if you don't, you have no rights. You don't deserve, you can be killed, you can be sent to a prison camp, whatever, because you're a non-person. You have no rights. Dispensing of existence. Resonates a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to... Margaret Singer was an Army psychologist, same period of time, sent by the Army to study brainwashing. She wrote a number of books. One of them is Cults and Our Myths. She has a six-part model. I'm going to skip over that for now just because I want to leave time for questions and answers. Here's my four-part model. Again, it's on my website, freedomofmind.com. I don't know if people in the back can see the words, but the highlights are regulation of individual's physical reality, where, how, and with whom the member lives and associates, what clothes, colors, hairstyles the person wears, food they eat, drinks, adopts, rejects, how much sleep the person's able to have, financial dependency, little or no time spent on leisure, entertainment, vacation, major time commitment required for, you get the picture? Quack, 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 quack. Need to ask permission for major decisions. Need to report thoughts, feelings, and activities to superiors. Rewards and punishments. A lot of behavior mod. Individualism discouraged. Groupthink prevails. Rigid rules and regulations. Need for obedience and dependency. Information control. Information is the food we use to think. That's why anyone who wants to control another person wants to control who they talk to, what books they read, what they are exposed to. It's censorship. Somebody does a coup. They want to take over a country. First thing they do is they abolish the free press. They round up all the critics, kill them or exile them. I mean, it's standard operating procedure for mind control. Deception. Deliberately holding back information, distorting information to make it acceptable, outright lying. By the way, have all of you read 1984? Yes. Got to read that book. I read it before the Moonies, and somehow when I read it after the Moonies, it just took on a whole new dimension. Access to non-cult sources of information, and boy, oh boy, they don't want you to talk to former members. Ooh! Critical information. Keep them so busy they don't have time to think. Compartmentalize information. Outside insider. And the internet has been the bane of all mind control cults. They hate it. More. Spying on members. Pairing a buddy system. Talk about the missionaries. Oh, my Lord. And amazing. So anyway, reporting deviant feelings, extensive use of cult-generated propaganda and information, unethical use of confession. So I've incorporated Lifton and Singer's model, and I like this one because I think it's easier to understand. When you read Lifton's chapter 22, and I really encourage you all to read it, you'll need a dictionary when you read it. And I should also say, Lifton went on to write a book about cults. It's called Destroying the World to Save It. It's about the Japanese sarin gas cult, Om Shinrikyo. But he talks about his criteria in that context. Thought control, need to internalize the group doctrine as truth. Black and white, good versus evil, we talked about that. The loaded language. Only good and proper thoughts. So there's a concept called thought stopping that I want to take a moment to explain to you. It's a behavior modification technique, and it's based on the understanding of what Ken was referring to earlier as cognitive dissonance theory, which was created by Leon Festinger. And it basically says we have thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and if we change any one, the other two will shift to reduce dissonance. So if you want to change how you feel, change how you think. You want to, or change your behavior. Yeah, any one of the three. And essentially, in the Moonies, I was taught, and as were all other members, that if I have a doubt, it's not me thinking it, it's an evil spirit invading me, testing me. And in the Moonies, we were taught to chant, to pray, to sing, to hum, to do anything to block out the negative thought. And it became quite automatic. The minute someone would say, isn't Moon a cult leader? I would be like, in my head, Jew parents, Jew parents, Jew parents, Jew parents, glory to heaven, peace on earth, glory to heaven, peace on earth.
Truth parents, true parents. Satan, get away, Satan, get away.
And so what that does is it interrupts reality testing. Reality testing is like, you brought up a question I should think about, you know, what's the merits of your argument and what is my experience and go back and forth. No, when you're in a mind control cult, you're not allowed to think negative thoughts. And if you have negative thoughts, you're made to feel guilty. You're not good enough. If you really believed, if you really submitted, if you really overcame, if you really were devoted, if you really, you know, pray harder. Pray harder. But the system is set up for you to stay dependent. Because if you do allow those thoughts, you'll leave. And all of you have, or at least almost everybody here has, as far as I know. Hypnosis. I could do a 7-day workshop on the use of altered states of consciousness techniques by cult groups. I'm aware that some of the early descriptions of Joseph Smith's influence on people were described as entrancement. And one of the features of trance is what's referred to as hallucinations. And there are two categories of hallucinations in terms of the hypnotic literature, positive hallucinations and negative hallucinations. And very simply, positive hallucination, and I should say you can have a hallucination in any one of your five senses. It doesn't have to be visual. A positive hallucination is where, for example, visual is where you see something there that isn't there. A negative hallucination is where you make it disappear. Something that's actually there, it blanks out. So, and hypnotic techniques like this are normal in people's sports experience, art, dance. I don't know any professional sports person that isn't trained to do positive hallucinations and negative hallucinations. Just to give an example, professional basketball player shooting a free throw, you know, has 100 people waving and screaming. Women showing their breasts. Someone who's a good free throw shooter doesn't see anything, doesn't hear anything. All they see is the ball going through the hoop. They are able to focus that intensely on the experience. And what happens, so trance is normal. When you drive long distances, it's like, where were those last 10 miles? Or you're reading a good book or your movie. Wow, where did the time go? It's normal. What happens with cults, though, is they do hypnotic prayers. At least in the Monies, we would pray really intensely. Oh, Heavenly Father, save them. I'm doing it as a little caricature on purpose because I don't want to freak anyone out, especially ex-Moonies watching the tape. Heavenly Father, we are your children. Help us to overcome our selfishness, Father. Open up our hearts so that we really can know your truth and devote our... And you go on and on and on and on. And what it does is it gets people into an altered state of consciousness where their critical faculties are... And it's just going right in. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And it's incredibly dangerous, obviously, when there are demagogues who want to control and enslave people. Emotional control, manipulate, narrow the range of people's feelings, make person feel that if they've ever had problems, it's always their fault. It's never the group's fault. It's never the doctrine's fault. Your fault. Memorize this one, people. You loan somebody some money, they don't pay you back. You say, can I have it back? And they like, what's the matter with you? You don't trust me? And it's already your problem? It's like, beep, 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 beep. No, you promised if I gave you the money, you were going to pay me back. You know, like, let's keep, you know, reality going here. guilt, 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 fear, 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 phobias, 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 oops, phobias, 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 which I talked about. Okay. I think that's all I need from this. So, how am I doing on time? Yes, that would be great. I literally would love if we could, you know, think about the future at some point, 3 days to actually tell you what I basically do when I'm counseling somebody who's left a cult and has problems, because it takes about 20 to 25 hours to do a basic, like, let's talk about the basics. And Ken mentioned the Milgram Obedience study, where the shock machine. And I would recommend go on YouTube and do a search for Milgram, M-I-L-G-R-A-M, and they have some video up of that. There was something called the Ash Conformity Study, A-S-C-H, Solomon Ash. That's a study where they put 9 people in a room, one of whom is the test subject. They have cards with lines. There's a sample line and then 3 choices of different sizes. And they go around the room, and people are in on the experiment. They start giving the wrong answer. And the experiment is, how many people will start saying a 2-inch line is a 3-inch line just because everyone in the room says it is? And the answer is about 2/3 start giving the wrong answer. 2/3 shock people to the point where they are fainted or dead because an authority figure says, you must continue. You made a commitment. It's very important. You must continue. You have no choice. And so the literature on conformity to groups, the literature on conformity to authority figures, and of course not to mention the Messiah or the prophet of God or whatever, how much more power that has than a person in a white lab coat. The Zimbardo prison experiment, where they took healthy young men, divided them into prisoners and guards, and they had to call off a 2-week experiment in 6 days because they were going nuts. People were having nervous breakdowns. Guards were becoming sadists. Basically what happened at Abu Ghraib. But in the 70s in the basement of Stanford University lab. So there's a lot of social psychological literature that I really encourage you to study and understand you were not stupid. You were human. You were just doing the best you knew how to adapt to an incredibly dysfunctional reality. And there were so many people that I've met who were in the Moonies who admired me in the Moonies. Because, you know, and I heard some people upset, like, I just was, you know, too honest. I never had a vision. I had the visions. I, you know, had the accolades and everything else. Well, getting out, I was like, I wish I could have been more like them and not just done whatever I was told to do and believed on, blindly. Well, I think what I'd like to do is say a couple of words about the strategic interaction approach and then open it to questions. There's so much more that I would like to share. When I first got out of the Moonies, deprogramming what was the method of choice, the only method, and it was basically grab somebody, put them in a room, and kind of grill them, a la like what police do interrogations and such. And it worked a lot of times. Not because of the roughness, but because the person was away from the group, because the person was exposed to former members. And by the way, former members are the antidote to phobia indoctrination. Because if members see ex-members happy and fulfilled and spiritual, it's like, whoop, the counterexample. Wait a minute. They were supposed to be drooling and insane and drug addict, committing suicide, robbing banks. Lost my train of thought. Little before that. Thank you. So the forcible stuff I did for about a year is like, it worked, but I just can't handle the stress. It's illegal. I don't like getting punched and having coffee thrown in my face. But I still felt a heart to want to help people that were still stuck in the Moonies and in other groups. And so I started thinking about how could I empower families to try to get people into a voluntary situation with me. And that's essentially what combating cult mind control is all about. And essentially what happened was a lot of the major cults read my book, at least the leaders read my book, and they refused to allow anyone to come home to visit for 2 or 3 days without a buddy or without calling in every 3 hours and such. And I was kind of forced to evolve my approach. And so I've developed over time, and as I've had more and more training as a family therapist and as a therapist, I've evolved an approach where I get a team of people together, including family members, friends, ex-members, community people who are concerned, and we kind of work in a very organized, systematic way on how to use ethical influence to get the person to start reality testing. And what I learned very early on, because of thought stopping, is the worst thing you can do is attack the group head on. Because it just elicits the thought stopping. It elicits the fear, phobia reaction. You're the devil. You're the persecutor. Doesn't work. What worked is for me to talk about other groups, other situations, and ask them what they think about it. And since Heaven's Gate, which was about 10, 11 years ago, I don't know how many of you remember in San Diego, 39 people killed themselves thinking they were going to go to a flying saucer, the Hale-Bopp comet. So they made a video before they killed themselves, all the members. And I have a copy and it exists. And they're like this, you may think that I'm in a cult. You think I may be brainwashed, but I'm not. This is the wisest thing I've ever done. And they go on and on like that. And I've yet to show that video to anyone and ask the question, what do you think? Do you think that they are making their own choice to kill themselves, to go to the flying saucer? I've yet to have anyone say anything but, boy, are they brainwashed. Or, boy, is that a cult. And so to create a case example where the person can buy in, yeah, that's an example, you know, Jonestown, that's really an example, even though it's far more extreme than what their situation was or my situation was in the Moonies, it begins to build a case for the fact that intelligent, educated people can have their behavior controlled and their information controlled and their thoughts controlled and their emotions controlled. And they can be given a new name. They can be given a new way of dressing and they can be isolated. And so what do you make of that, for example? And so the basic strategy is not to do the one shot deal of an intervention, but over time, and to try to bring in people from many different quarters to lay seeds, to get people thinking, to build rapport and trust. I have a 3-step phobia intervention, which I mentioned earlier, where it's essentially teaching what is a legitimate fear, like a rhinoceros is charging me right now, I'm on the African savanna, freak out and run, or I'm watching Jumanji on TV and there's a rhinoceros coming out in the movie of the TV and it's exciting, but it's of no danger to me, you know, to have that critical and to be able to understand that the structure of a phobia, it involves a visualization in your head a negative scene, a negative self-talk, and holding your breath or hyperventilating. That's how to have a panic attack, is those three pieces. And how to cure phobias is to assess that there's no danger. Make a positive visualization. I'll use the example of elevators, people with elevator phobias. They need to be able to see themselves getting in an elevator, riding safely and comfortably. And they need to be able to hear their voice saying, oh, nice elevator. It was inspected in the last 6 months. Emergency brakes, telephone. Cool. In a very calm, soothing voice and deep breathing. And with those three pieces and what's called systematic desensitization, so you get the person to visualize where the elevator is, you know, 100 feet away, then 80 feet away, and 60 feet away, and 50 feet away. Then you get them to the point where they're pressing the button and feeling okay about it. Because they're not going to get in unless they're ready to get in. And then they put one foot in, and they put one foot out. It's one of the fastest mental illnesses to cure, is phobias. So you do the phobia, and if you have a phobia, then you can tell your loved one about how you have this phobia and how you got cured. So it's easy. Then you get into talking about how other groups put phobias in people's minds in order to keep them dependent and obedient. Now, if you've been hammering somebody in the group, you're not the right person to do the phobia intervention, because they're going to block it right away because they're expecting something from you. It's got to come from some side angle. But to get the idea across that phobias are fixable and that they can be a tool of manipulation and control. And then the third piece is, what if, you know, you're never in the group and you were happy and fulfilled? What would you be doing right now? Or, you know, what if, you know, God came to you and said, it's your mission to leave the LDS? Would you believe it? If you knew it was God, would you do it? Or would you say, nah, it's too comfortable, I want to be with my family? And so there are these questions that can really place a seed in people's minds to get them thinking, I don't have to go down this narrow, you know, rat maze. No, there are some other choices here. And especially in light of what's going on in, you know, with the world economy and everything else, I think people are more scared. I'm afraid cults are going to be recruiting more people during this time. And so, and my point of view, I know I'm biased, but I believe former members are like white blood cells are to the body's immune system. It's like, warning, 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 you know, don't do it. Trust me, check it out. Go on the web, research, research. Group plus cult in Google, you know, name of group plus mind control with quotation marks in Google. Group plus brainwashing, group plus criticisms. And if something's legitimate, it will stand up to scrutiny. It will. And if it's not, then why spend your time and energy and emotions and money doing something that isn't true? Life's too short. Life's too precious. And I'm going to conclude. We're going to do questions, but I want to end by saying that in my experience, love is much more powerful than mind control. And for those of you who love your father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter who've cut off from you, trust that your love is real. Your love is a force. And if there was love reciprocated prior to you leaving the group, trust in the person's authentic self. That despite all the cult indoctrination that may say hurtful things and do hurtful things to you, believe, you know, and I'm not saying like La La Land believe, but just have hope that the truth will out and that they'll do the right thing and be patient And realize when you're meeting some Jehovah's Witness who's knocking on your door that somebody's sister or brother or mother or father, and take a few minutes and talk with them and make a connection with them. And I talk in my second book about a whole bunch of techniques that you can just to connect with that person. And maybe someone will do that with your loved ones. And if you know where your loved one is and what city, you might be able to network with some ex-Moonies over there or ex-Scientologists who can go to some meetings and do it, you know, for you over there and ask some of the hard questions. Excuse me, I'd like to ask a question. What is this about Joseph Smith having sex with other married women? You know, and cults don't want people asking those kinds of questions in their meetings. And you do it over and over and over again with different people. It's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And it's like, well, if you want to be a religion, then be transparent, be accountable, be responsible, admit Joseph Smith was a liar and a pervert. And that, you know, let's remake the Mormon church now based on human rights and honesty and transparency. You know, I believe in reform. Okay, I'm going to end. Question. And I'm going to repeat the question for the video.
Hang on before we start. Just because of the recording, please keep the mic about 2 inches from your mouth.
I was going to just repeat the question, just for time's sake, so we can get a few more questions in. Go. Oh, you have it.
Yes, sir. Will you speak of therapy cults? S started many years ago. They've renamed it, and it's a really big thing in the Valley here. Are you familiar with therapy cults? You know, come to our weekend seminar. You know, it'll change your life. And
you mean like Landmark Forum?
Yeah.
Empath. Empath. So the question is about therapy cults. The thing is that there are thousands and thousands of these groups. A percentage of people get out of a cult, don't get therapy, and start their own cult. It's really, really sickening, but it's really true, and I can't keep up with them. And I kind of made a decision 30 years ago that instead of becoming an expert, content expert on particular groups, I wanted to focus on psychology, the psychology of influence, of how to help people get out of mind control situations, and how to educate the public and preventively inoculate people so they're not mind controlled. So I apologize if I don't know the name of that. But yes, I've worked with people who are victims of therapy abuse. Yes, that's right. I'm calling. Okay, I guess they want to use it.
Why do cults most generally use a lot of fasting and prayer?
Why do cults use a lot of fasting?
Fasting and prayer.
I think that altering people's physiology in terms of sleep deprivation, in terms of depriving yourself of food and such is a universal. I kind of skipped over it, but another paradigm by another one of the 50s researchers, Edgar Schein, wrote a book, Coercive Persuasion. He talked about a three-part model of unfreezing, changing, and refreezing. And part of unfreezing someone would be to disorient them. So when you are weak, when you are tired, it's that much easier for the indoctrination to be put into a person's mind. As far as prayer goes, I confess I do believe in a divine being. I don't believe in a man as a god or some anthropomorphization. I do believe in the power of prayer. I believe in that it's valuable. But I don't engage in controlling prayer like I was demonstrating before, where you're telling people what God wants for them and what they should be doing. I'm more like pray for peace and pray for kindness and pray that people will grow and learn and develop. So I also believe that meditation can be a very positive technique, mind control technique, to kind of turn off the automatic thoughts. But again, the key concept is the locus of control has to be in you and not with some group or some guru or some institution out there. And that whatever you're doing is meditating, it's not, you're not abandoning your critical faculties. You're still able to think and evaluate. And I made a promise to myself after I got out of the Moonies that no matter what I did, I would always want to hear the critical side. I'd always seek out other points of view on whatever it was that I was interested in learning. And it's been a very good decision. Yes.
Prior to your invitation to speak here today, what was the extent of your knowledge of the LDS Church? And would you say that you've learned a lot more now? Or, I mean, when did you start considering it like a cult, I guess, in your own mind?
When I, I'm here. So to answer your question, it's in all honesty, the people who contacted me, I remember Sandra Tanner contacting me maybe 20 years ago after Combating came out. I heard from a number of other people who were essentially saying it was a cult, but then telling me how Christianity was the truth. And being a Jew and being a social psychologist, that didn't connect the dots with me. And frankly, no one really until the last couple of years has come to me and said, you know, I read your book and I need help. Like, I want your advice on how to help a loved one, or I'm having trouble coping and I'd like some therapy. So it has not really been on my radar screen until the last couple of years. And it's probably not on my handout, but it has been up on my website, and people like Richard and Sue and a number of other people have been educating me. And when they invited me to come here, I'm learning a lot. And I repeat, if it quacks and like a duck and as a feather is like a duck. Everything that I've heard so far is completely stereotypical. I hope it doesn't, you know, rub the elitists in you the wrong way. But there's no difference in what you've said with people coming out of the Children of God, Scientology, any number of other Jehovah's Witnesses, any number of other cults. Yes? Walk back to the mic. Yes.
Basically, it seems like to me an important part of humanity and having influence in the world is cooperation. So if you have 10 million people that are willing to give up a little bit of themselves, they can have a significant influence. If you have 20,000 people in a conference center willing to give up a little bit of themselves, they have a huge influence.
Right.
You have 300 people in a small room that have a real hard time cooperating, and it seems like a real losing proposition. I just wondered if you have any idea there.
The reality is that in 32 years, I've consistently had the experience that ex-members don't want to be in groups, distrust authority figures, don't want to be told what to do, and I had a real issue because I was a leader in the Moonies and I was really embarrassed with assuming any type of leadership in any way in the counter-cult field. I didn't want to go there. But at a certain point of therapy and evolution and growth, it's like, wait a minute. Nobody's taking the lead. Nobody's contacting the media to do a soundbite on, you know, the crap that some cult is spewing on X subject or Y subject. And the bottom line is I would like people to evaluate. And I also want to say, I always recommend to my clients, help heal yourself as your primary focus first before trying to help others, which is exactly the opposite of how we were trained in cults. And it's not selfish. It's actually very healthy and very healing. And you can do more by modeling being a healthy human being than by using words and trying to convince somebody to do this or do that. But I'm all for balance in terms of, you know, having a life, but also serving and helping others. And it's not an easy road to move, but it's definitely worth doing. Yes?
So typically, how far up do you have to go in the food chain before people know about the fraud and they know they're perpetrating the fraud, specifically with LDS Inc.?
I get asked that all the time, not about LDS, but other cults, and I don't have the answer. I can tell you that as a good Mooney, I was aware of contradictions, of hypocrisies, of, you know, being me telling people Moon was married once when I knew he was married twice. But I didn't have the luxury of being able to think. Because the moment I would think, it was Satan, and I did thought stopping. So, you know, so I was definitely perpetrating. I was breaking up families. I was having people drop out of school. I was defrauding the public, you know, raising money on the street with selling flowers and whatever. I don't know the answer in particular groups with particular people, but putting people in accountable situations, like I think Ken was quoting interview with Newsweek or Time or something. Well, those types of situations are golden, you know, with cult leaders and such, because they're real. They have to answer. And what's even better is getting them on a stand in a legal suit, where they have to swear to tell the truth, and where they can be put in jail if they lie. That's really interesting. Next question. Yes, she has the phone.
I have the mic. Did you go through the endowment, the fake one?
No, I was too tired last night, but I promise I have a link on it on my webpage on the Mormons to Richard's things. I promise I will watch it.
Okay. My question is, in the hypnotic mind control that they use, do they use music, especially non-melodic music, low lighting, and monotony to put people into
monotony, monotony, rhythm, dark lights, soothing, calm kinds of voice like that?
Stephen, I am not a person who goes to sleep anywhere where I'm not supposed to go to sleep. I never, ever do that.
Right.
When I go to the temple,
when
I
you
sit
have,
there.
You mean when you
I
have?
When I did. When I did. Right. Yeah.
That, by the way, can I interrupt you just for a second? It's a very important pattern here. And that is, for ex-members, you need to really be aware of their language and put the past in the past and the now in the now and the future in the future. Go.
Anyway, in the temple, as soon as those lights went down, I'd fight and fight to keep my eyes open.
Sounds like Pavlov's dogs.
And you turn around and everybody else in the room is
nodding
off.
I mean in terms of a programmed conditioned response.
Yeah.
When I hear a description like that, if someone is automatically, without their will or volition, having a response, it's like ring, ring. So, but the technique that I was saying before about you visualizing how you would want to behave if you knew then what you know now, and go back into that scene, and instead of closing your eyes, going, wait a minute, this is hypnotic.
I'm out of here.
Flip him a bird. Do it in your mind. I'm serious. Think about key moments where you were this close to leaving, like a dozen in times. Go through each moment, only this time leave the way you would have wanted to leave if you knew then what you know now. You'll find yourself getting more and more solid and grounded instead of having this suppressed cult identity. Yes, back there.
The way I see it, virtually all religions have cultish aspects. Some of them pretty strongly. So I was wondering if you considered Catholicism or even Judaism to also be close, and where you draw the line.
Thank you. Very good question. So I, d- I, d- I don't have a PowerPoint on it, but if you imagine, I'm not doing a hypnotic suggestion, if you imagine the line from here to here, where the arrow is going there to destructive and the arrow going here to constructive or benign, I use the BITE model on a case-by-case basis to evaluate, you know, if a particular group is using deception. They don't tell people up front who they are, what they believe, and what they want from them. And by the way, the Moonies do the milk before meat, you know, wrap too. That's what I was taught, that we don't tell people because it's, you can't feed an infant steak. It would choke, and you have to feed them what they can swallow. And except that they were adults and I was defrauding people is what I was doing. But so for example, I have an allergy to anybody who says they have the truth with a capital T. Like I have an automatic allergy to it, but I have friends who are Orthodox, you know, Christian ministers who know about cults and stuff. They've never tried to proselytize me. They never tried to make me feel like I was going to hell or whatever. They have always treated me with love and respect and such. And I do believe, so for example, an Orthodox Christian church, your mother's sick and is calling for you to go visit. In a cult, you go and ask for permission to go visit. In an Orthodox Christian church, you might go to your pastor or your minister and say, could you say a prayer? Because my mom's sick, you know, and that you go. So I really, to be very explicit, I look at behaviors. What is a group doing? And to the extent that they're controlling information, the more it does, the more it goes to this destructive end. The less it does like this. The more there's a pyramid structure where there's someone at the top who's closer to God than everybody else, like the Pope or whatever, I have real problems with that. You know, I have problems where if the Catholic Church says, don't read these books, or let's cover up all the priest molestations, this is not good for the church. And it's just like a fundamental disconnect with what I know and believe to be basic, you know, decency. Yes. Did I answer your question? Okay. She's next.
Oh, sorry.
Stand up.
Okay. I was raised in the church. I was born and raised in it. And so I'm really aware of how much of the programming took place when I was very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a 7-year-old and I'm divorced and I share him with my ex-husband who is in the church and takes him on his weekends.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to protect my son and keep him from being raised and programmed?
We share custody
and we have every other weekend. What can we do as parents to help?
Number one, heal yourself.
Yeah.
Be real, be authentic. Number two, kids are sharp. You know, a lot of kids see through the BS faster than a lot of adults do and stuff. Excuse me. And so, how old is your child? 7. So there are, we put up a few videos on ZenuTV.com. Have you heard of ZenuTV.com? XENUTV.com. By the way, do all of you know that Tom Cruise is in a cult? Called Scientology. You get that? You know what they believe? They believe about Xenu, the galactic dictator from 75 million years ago who came to the planet Tigiak and put all the beings in volcanoes and detonated a hydrogen bomb, and all these dead beings are now on our bodies and we need Scientology to get rid of these body things? Mission Impossible. I lost my train of thought. Small children. So on ZenuTV.com under general interest videos, there's videos like The Wave. Have you ever seen The Wave? It's about a high school experiment in the 60s where the students were not understanding how people could turn in their family and friends in the Holocaust to the Germans. And so the teacher starts a club called The Wave and they have a salute and everything. It's 1 hour and it's a really good educational framework to start a discussion for how people can, you know, be influenced by conformity, by group process, by authority figures, etc. And so, and plus, there's a lot of newsy kinds of snippets that come through that you can discuss about other groups, like Tony Alamo got arrested, thank God, another pervert, polygamist cult leader. So there's lots of things that you can do even with a young child. There's a great website called criticalthinking.org. Have you heard about that? Criticalthinking.org. I also wanted to mention Philip Zimbardo, who is my mentor, and he's just incredible. He was president of the American Psychological Association. He did a Psych 101 course online for free. You could literally take a college-level psychology course. It's at learner.org, L-E-A-R-N-E-R.org. The title of the show is Discovering Psychology. And there's a segment called Constructing Social Reality. And I'm in it and talks about cults. And it also shows another experiment where a teacher divides kids between the blue-eyed kids and the brown-eyed kids. And it's you want to do little pieces, sow seeds, but most of all, be loving. Be loving. Yes.
I don't want to have a myopic view here, but living here in the Valley, Salt Lake City, the LDS Church, I don't know whether you're aware of this or not, would sit about in the middle of the Fortune 500 as far as their financial wealth. They also, there's such a concentrated group here of Mormons. I wonder if there's any parallels with Mormonism, because a lot of these cults are very isolated, whereas Mormonism, they control a major university, Brigham Young University, from which, of course, they admit all their information and their doctrine. And often when I talk to Mormons, I say, well, you go to the little section in the library published by BYU, but I prefer the other five stories and the other 90% of the library. And researching my arguments, I was just wondering if there are any parallels that you've seen.
Well, Moon has an accredited university, University of Connecticut at Bridgeport, and the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, you know, the giggling yogi that for $3,000 can teach you how to levitate, walk through walls, become invisible. And if you believe that, I have a bridge I'll give you a really good deal on. But they have an accredited university in Fairfield, Iowa. There's a lot of cults. I'm not aware of any you know major group that has politicians in Washington who are believers. I you know when I first got invited, I was like, you want me to come to Salt Lake City? Can't you know why are you having this meeting in Salt Lake City? Like, are we going to be safe in Salt Lake City? I mean, honestly, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, other questions?
Over here. Yeah. I'm just dying to know the answer to this question. So many of us that have left are the only person in our families that have left, that have somehow just, I mean, all by ourselves, gone and studied and found out, not learned from anybody else, but just what makes the difference between a person that will do that and the people that never even want to, or, you know, I just don't get that. Is there some susceptibility?
I don't have an answer.
Oh, crap.
Except that your soul or your spirit or your personality.
That's, I thought it was pain, too. But I wonder.
You're what?
Well, I've always thought it was pain because I've had
pain?
A lot of pain.
Pain is
from
a big motivator.
That sent me there. But I wondered, I don't know.
I don't have an answer for what makes one person, you know, do what in an environment like that, except that I can tell you, if you see the Ash Conformity study and you see people looking in the space of an hour at lines that are 2-inch lines and saying they're 3-inch lines just because everyone else in the room is saying it, it shows you the power of our species, that we want to adapt and we want to conform. It's something very deep in our nature. But once you learn that's a feature, I can guarantee you, if you're ever in a room and somebody's trying to tell you a 2-inch line is a 3-inch line, you're going to say, no, it's not. And if they insist that it is, you're going to get up and you're going to measure the sucker. Or you're going to get up and walk out and say, you're nuts. You people are crazy, you know, because you learn from your experience. You have a mic?
No, right here. No, we need you to just take a turn. Sorry, we'll come back to you in a second.
Sir.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, you know, one of the things that always puzzles me is at what point do we cross the line or a person, you know, in approaching when somebody's trying to influence us. You know, I'm kind of looking at, like, well, right now we're in the middle of a big political season, obviously. And you see the whole gamut of people, from people who are just, oh, okay, this is, you know, this candidate might be good, that candidate might be good, all the way up to people who are, I guess, fringe wackos, if you will.
Right.
Who would go out practically and kill a candidate if they didn't think they were the right person for the job or something like
this. I'm afraid so.
And it seems like we human beings can transition from, and sometimes not very difficult, it isn't very difficult sometimes for the person to transition from somebody who's just on, you know, just looking at a situation, gets drawn in, and they just keep going further and further and further until they become a radical.
That's what we know from social psychology, that the situation, because we are sensory based and we're taking in information from our environment, it influences us. And it can influence us in a very constructive way and empower us and give us new tools to think and ways to dial into our feelings, or it can depersonalize us and make us feel fearful or guilty or be, you know, look to someone to think for us and such. So I acknowledge that. By the way, Zimbardo has a book called The Lucifer Effect, which Ken mentioned. It's an excellent book. And Zim did a talk at Harvard Law School, and it's on video on the web where he goes through some of the themes. So for those of you who don't want to read the book, you can do a search for The Lucifer Effect plus Harvard Law School in quotes, and you'll find the video for that. Other question? Yes.
My daughter, a while back, I don't even know what I think it was because I'd ordered an iced coffee, and she was upset about that, and I said, well, just kind of jokingly, the word of wisdom says hot drinks, this is cold. And she told me she'd prayed the whole night after that to reestablish her testimony. And she said, Mom, I can't talk to you anymore about these things because I like having someone telling me how to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a lot personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so with my children, what I have tried to do is just do the critical thing, just pose questions. And I don't know what else to do because they are with their father so much.
Yeah.
That I don't know what else to do besides just say, well, this is what I see. You know, kind of try to give them a balanced
picture.
Right. Is that going to be enough? You know,
I believe that there's an infinite number of things that people can do, especially if you have contact with your loved ones. So, but I definitely am one that says prepare and then do things and not just, you know, shoot from the hip and do shotgun kinds of things. And I outline in the strategic interaction approach a very goal-oriented, pragmatic model. It has people thinking, where am I now? You know, what is my goal? And I urge my clients to think in terms of helping a loved one. The goal is to empower the person to think for themselves and make their own decisions. The goal isn't to get them out of any particular group. And if it is, you're setting yourself up for a control battle and a win-lose battle, and you're going to lose. Or usually you're going to lose. But if you set it up as, I love you, I'm learning, I'm growing, I just want to understand, help me to understand, and you have a questioning kind of approach, think, what are the steps I need to take? And what I tell my clients is the first step is always rapport and trust building. It's always rapport and trust building. People want to go for the home run and do the knockout punch. But if they don't have rapport and trust, they've got to make the time to do the nice things, to help them with their homework, to teach them math or to share things that are of interest to them, to do the things that they like to do. And just by osmosis, by you hanging out with them, they're going to have some positive influences, I can assure you. And then after rapport and trust building, I talk about gathering information. But again, it's information about getting inside how that person thinks and feels and looks at the world. And then it's only based on those two things that there are strategic things, seeds you can plant and other reality testing kinds of strategies. And I always take the position that deep down inside, the person knows what they need. If I can just dial in to where they're at and have rapport, they'll tell me what they're missing or what is blocking them from making that move. And what else do I want to say about that? So, and to think about what's within my control right now and what's outside of my control. A lot of people waste a lot of time and energy worrying about things they can do nothing about. And it's so much wiser to figure something constructive you can do something about. You know, if you can think how to move something from out of control to within your control, that's worthwhile. But I say, you know, schedule an hour a week to just think about those, to just worry about all the things you have no control over. But the rest of the time, think about how can I spend my time effectively and constructively. And I truly believe, like the fellow who is with the media and the petitions and stuff, cults are very responsive to media. Especially big groups like the Moonies, the Jehovah's Witnesses, they want to be mainstream. They wanted to run someone for president. You know, they're very sensitive. They're very sensitive. So there's, you know, think about, like, I was listening to Ken's presentation on lying, and I'm like trying to think, how could we set up a scenario on camera with one of the leaders, you know, asking them specifically about lying and then asking him what does he think about this example or that example or that example? You know, I mean, think strategically and chip away here, chip away there. What also to keep in mind, all these different cults are in competition with each other for taking over the world. The Moonies do not want LDS to take over the world. Scientology does not want the Moonies to take over the world. In fact, when the Scientologists start really pressuring me and harassing me and stuff, I try to talk to the highest one I can. I say, you know, you need me around because Moon wants to take over the world. And if he does, the first thing he's going to do is take away all Scientology. He's going to abolish all other religions because this is the only true one. And you need people like me who are critics who can tell what's really going on inside the Moonies. And they're like, yeah, yeah, it's true. I haven't thought about that. Yes, back.
Okay. Can you
only have time for two more questions?
Can you speak to the role of anger in recovery? Because I have a sense, you know, a certain amount is good, but that some of it's pretty non-productive, and that's basically my question.
Anger. So, I mean, the bottom line is when you're in a mind control cult, you're suppressing a lot of emotions, and so when you're coming out in the recovery phase, you really want to give yourself a lot of space to feel whatever you're feeling, even if it's very extreme and very exaggerated. I would just caution you, don't do anything illegal. You know, and I would visualize, you know, punching Moon in the face and, you know, kicking him with karate chops and all kind, you know, and side sweeps and whatever. But one interesting thing about research and psychology is, you know, there used to be primal scream therapy and take a bataka and bang pillows and stuff. It will let out the anger. The research has demonstrated that it amplifies your anger. It actually makes you more angry. So to think cognitive dissonance theory, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and think about how you want to be. And think about what you can do, you know, within your control. A lot of former members get a lot of gratification out of helping people get out of cults and writing stuff on the web and doing protests and doing constructive things that might help raise awareness, that might help, you know, save another person. So I would say channel that. And the last question?
Right here.
Okay.
You mentioned modeling. When a person leaves a cult, it's a good idea to model the behavior of other normal people.
Right.
But I was raised in the church. I was born in the church. When I left, I hadn't a clue what normal was. How do you do that?
Right. So, I mean, the I'm really glad you asked this question. And I don't have a quickie answer, except that psychologists, you know, there's a whole field within psychology called developmental psychology. And it kind of comes back to your point also about your child. It's like I believe that there's a normal developmental growth where you're doing everything, making all your decisions for your child, but you want to encourage them as they get older to make their own decisions, make good judgments and such. And that, in fact, what mind control cults do is they retard the normal developmental process. They want to keep people as children forever, as opposed to individuated adults. So to answer your question, I would study developmental psychology. I would talk to people who were non-cult and say, tell me about your childhood. And so like when my work with ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, they'd be like, we never got to have a birthday party. Never got to have a birthday party. It's like, have a birthday party. You know, go to someone else's birthday party. Visualize having a birthday party. You know, I never got to go into a church. Go visit some churches. You know, I never got to be validated that my thoughts matter. And get a support group together and say, you know what? Your thoughts matter. You know, you have a right to your opinion. You have a right to disagree and such. So you're giving yourself healing experiences. There's a very good book that I can recommend called Giving the Love That Heals by Harville Hendricks, who is an Imago therapist. He's an excellent couples therapist. I also like his work for that. But it's a very good book. It talks about, you know, parenting and kind of how to allow the child to grow up to be their true selves. And it's got a very nice piece in it on intentional dialogue and how to mirror back what the person is saying and learning different communication strategies is definitely another piece of how to have positive impact. So we've run out of time, but I'm very grateful that Sue, you invited me, and Richard, you invited me, and that I could share this. And I really encourage you to broaden your view and not be so focused on LDS, ex-LDS, but look at, there's this big, you know, there's millions of people who've been in mind control, abusive situations, and see yourself as LDS as a subset of this bigger phenomenon. And learn psychology and be your own best friend, be your own best therapist. Learn to trust yourself, be patient with yourself, be kind to yourself. Stop saying self-deprecating comments like you're stupid or you this or that. People are not stupid who are in mind control cults. In my experience, the vast majority are bright, talented, educated, idealistic, ambitious, creative. They want to make a difference. They want to improve themselves. So thank you for all being here and having me, and thank you.
I know if they had their druthers, you'd be up here another 2 hours. Thank you. It's been very helpful to a lot of us.